Our next case is Mylan Pharmaceuticals v. Merck Sharp & Dohme, 2021-21. Mr. Worlinger.
May it please the Court. The 708 patent is both anticipated and obvious because it does little more than give instructions on how to make acidic Lipton salt using phosphoric acid that is encompassed within the prior art. The Board's decision to the contrary is marred by legal error.
Well, these aren't process claims.
For anticipation specifically, no, we're talking about the compound claims themselves. That is correct. And the fundamental flaw with the Board's anticipation analysis is that it applied the standard too narrowly. It seemed like it was only looking for an express single disclosure of a one-to-one sitagliptin DHP salt combined as it appears in the 708 patent. Nothing else would seemingly do. But that's not the law. The anticipating reference does not have to expressly spell out all the limitations arranged or combined as they are in the claim. That's Kennametal. Nor do all the limitations have to be gleaned from a single reference. That's Glaxo Group. So long as the skilled artisan can read the reference, apply their knowledge of the art, and arrive at the invention without undue experimentation, it's anticipated.
That sounds like obviousness.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think what distinguishes this from obviousness is that we are looking specifically at a single reference, and we're asking, what is the skilled artisan going to read based on that reference and that reference alone? We're not looking outside the four corners.
Are we talking about claims 1 and 2 or 3 and 4?
We're talking about claim 1. I'm using claim 1 at this particular point because we're talking about the one-to-one sitagliptin DHP.
And you're relying on that at once and vintage line of cases, right? Just to make sure I'm following you.
For the stoichiometry, yes, we are relying upon the envisaging doctrine because I think the reference gives you the salt. It gives you sitagliptin. It claims pharmaceutically acceptable salts. And it says, make the salts using phosphoric acid. The only thing that is not explicitly black and white on the paper is the stoichiometry of that salt.
But claims 1 and 2, the reference was overcome with respect to 1 and 2 because they showed a reduction of practice of as much as is in the reference prior to its effective date.
So, Your Honor, that goes to the antedation argument, and that applies to 103. I'm speaking at the moment about 102, and I do not believe that antedation impacts that argument. I'm happy to talk about antedation, but at the moment, we're speaking of...
But if the reference is overcome, it's overcome for all purposes. It's not a reference.
I don't know if that's entirely accurate, Your Honor, and certainly I don't think that's anything that Merck argued, and that's not what the board held. The antedation argument didn't come in as the antedation argument only came in as a defense to our 103 argument as it relates to these claims.
So is it 102E prior?
Beg your pardon?
Is the reference prior under 102E?
I believe that is accurate. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
So turning to the envisaging doctrine. Every salt has a stoichiometry. We're not dealing with a boundless universe here. You have a known salt, you have a known compound, and those two are going to interact in finite ways. And you can envisage what those are.
Well, hydrogen, phosphoric acid has three hydrogens, and there are several basic nitrogens, and so there are a lot of possibilities here.
There are possibilities, Your Honor, but I believe the parties agree that at most the sitagliptin compound is going to accept a proton at two sites, and phosphoric acid is triprotic. It only has three protons to donate, so six possible combinations, and realistically, we're only talking about four. Those are the only four have been found by the parties. Now
the there's expert testimony, and the board seems to have credited that there could be at least 264 possible salts. I think there was a number of 900 and something different combinations. Why is that not substantial evidence to support the board's ultimate conclusion here?
Your Honor anticipates where I'm going. That's not substantial. That's legal error because the framing is wrong. We have on the paper, we have sitagliptin, we have phosphoric acid, and that should be your starting point. By trying to broaden the scope out to all of the compounds that are in Claim 15 of the prior art, you're basically grafting onto that some kind of motivation to select analysis by not looking specifically at sitagliptin. It's there on the paper. And the court in Perricone rejected the notion that a teaching in the prior art cannot anticipate because it appears without special emphasis in a longer list. And I think you had a similar issue in the impacts case, which I think is very illustrative of what's going on here. There you had two patents. One of them recited the formula plus the compound. This court reversed, saying that patent can potentially anticipate because it identifies the compound. You had a second patent that only had the formula. This court affirmed, saying, no, that cannot anticipate because all it has is the formula. And there are no preferences expressed in the art that would allow you to envisage or get to the specific compound that was at issue. So the one-to-one stoichiometry is the most basic arrangement and the first that would come to the mind of the skilled artisan. And there's three areas that I point the court to. The first is the examples in the prior art. If you look at example 7, you have a one-to-one sitagliptin salt made in a 1,000-fold excess of hydrochloric acid, which is much stronger than phosphoric acid, one-to-one. Contrast that with examples 1 through 5. These examples concern sitagliptin analogs, those are Merck's words, made using hydrochloric acid. They are in 1-to-2 ratios. Based upon this, you can draw the inference that sitagliptin is going to form a 1-to-1 ratio with phosphoric acid. Reason being, phosphoric acid is weaker than hydrochloric acid.
It feels like what you're talking about feels like obviousness. Yeah, but I'm having a little bit of a hard time with you're talking about the picking and choosing of different parts of the reference. It sounds like you're talking about obviousness.
Again,
I want to make sure you are understanding my concern.
No, I am entertaining your concern, Your Honor. I understand that at the margins, 102 and 103 the margin can be a little gray. But here, I think we are within the boundaries of what 102 allows us to do because we are looking at a single reference. All of these are contained in a single prior art reference.
Are you talking about the old Petering case that one can look at a generic formula and envisage all of the species within that genus? Is that your point?
So Petering certainly is one of the cases that we are relying upon.
Petering involved about 20 compounds. But here, even with preferred salts, the court found 957 possibilities. A very different situation.
That's right, Your Honor. But again, I think I think this goes back to the problem with the way that the board framed up the issue. They were unwilling to consider the fact that sitagliptin is illustrated right there on the paper, and that should
on
be the
which
starting
paper.
It is Claim 15 of W0498, and that appears on appendix page 420.
But you're saying it is anticipated by which reference? The WO reference?
So there are two references that are identical to each other, and the parties and the board refer to them interchangeably. So you have W0498, that's the international patent, and then you have the 871 patent. It is identical in all material respects to W0498. So we refer to W0498, but honestly, you could use either of them, and you can rely exclusively upon one or the other. So the citation that I just gave you to page 422 of the record, that is to W0498. There is an analogous disclosure, claim 15, on the 871 patent. And once again, the problem that I have with the board and Merck's framing of this is that sitagliptin is illustrated right there on the paper. The pharmaceutically acceptable salt is claimed as part of Claim 15. And in defining what a pharmaceutically acceptable salt is, the specification says particularly preferred is phosphoric acid. That should be the starting point. Not all of the 33 compounds in Claim 15, and certainly not Formula 1 from which those compounds derive. So turning back to the one-to-one, I think the examples themselves are illustrative, but I want to point out two other areas where I believe that from which you could envisage the one-to-one. The first is the testing that is in the record to verify the stoichiometry. Merck created one-to-one sitagliptin DHP by running an automated salt screen that was conducted by a relatively novice chemist with a bachelor's degree, far below the prior the skill of the prior art. Skill of the skilled artisan. An automated salt screen is not undue experimentation, and I think it therefore falls within the ambit of 102. Relatedly, there is evidence in the record from Dr. Scheil of tests he ran in a related proceeding in Israel. He ran 12 different experiments deliberately trying to create something other than a one-to-one sitagliptin DHP salt, but he got one-to-one every time. The third area is Dr. Matzker. He doesn't deny that you could envisage a one-to-one. He doesn't even deny that it would be the first that you envisage. His point, Your Honors, is that other stoichiometries exist, and I'll address that in a moment. The fact that you can see the one-to-one should be enough for the envisaging analysis. We're dealing with a limited universe of options, which is what is required by Petering, and you can envisage the claimed arrangement, which is what is required under Kinemeta. Even if we do have to envisage those other stoichiometries, you can. And my basic point here is that the tests that Merck ran were, in the words of the board, conventional. If it's conventional testing, that's not undue experimentation. The court has no further questions. I'll use the remainder of my time to address antedation. I'm going to focus specifically on the claims that are subject to antedation. These are claims that should have been pretty easy calls under 103, but we didn't even get to the obviousness analysis because the board accepted Merck's bid to disqualify the prior art on antedation grounds. This is Merck's argument, Your Honor. It's their burden to prove it up, and we believe that the flaw in the board's analysis is that they did not hold them to their burden. The at-issue claims from the 708 patent broadly recite hydrates of sitagliptin, and the prior art definition of a pharmaceutically acceptable salt encompasses hydrates. The problem for Merck is that they admit that they did not reduce hydrates to practice before the effective date of the prior art. So what they do is they try to remove that element from the equation by saying that the prior art does not enable hydrates. The prior art is presumptively enabling, and to overcome the presumption of enablement, Merck needed to offer a Wands analysis. And if you look at the record, Your Honor, it's not a Wands analysis there. There's nothing that even looks like a Wands analysis in the record. Put simply, Merck could not have overcome the presumption of enablement, the presumption of enablement, if it did not even engage the controlling law.
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time. You can continue or save it.
I will save it, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Lamb.
Good morning, and may it please the court. We've gone from Peloton to Fitbit to diabetes medication. Seems like that's signs of aging. PTAB's 76-page opinion carefully considered and rejected each of Mylan's arguments on multiple grounds based meticulously on the record. Mylan does not come close to showing an absence of substantial evidence for the PTAB's decisions. Starting with anticipation. Ordinarily, anticipation requires disclosure of all the limitations as arranged in the claim. The idea of at once envisaging is a sort of an exception to that as arranged in the claim requirement, where you can sort of take things from different lists and combine them to provide the limitations as arranged, if it results in a small enough class that it would immediately come to mind to the skilled artisan.
That's Petering.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly Petering. Because the lists just bring it to mind, it's each class and its limitations, as if it were just written out, as if they had listed them expressly. But the point PTAB here gave four reasons why the at once envisaged exception to sort of, as arranged requirement doesn't apply. Why one skilled artisan looking at WO498 wouldn't just look at the 33 compounds in Claim 15. I should mention that Claim 15 is 33 compounds, including cetagliptin freebase, not one-to-one cetagliptin DHP.
How do you, I want to interrupt for 1 second, because one thing I'm puzzling about is how do you respond to opposing counsel's argument that you have to start with cetagliptin, not all 33 compounds in Claim 15?
Well, so the first is, when you're combining those lists, what's in 15? It's cetagliptin along with 33 other compounds as the board. There's nothing that points to cetagliptin in particular. As a matter of fact, their own expert, if you look at page 2347 of the record, page 189, line 1, he admits that W049 did not give any reason to pick cetagliptin and put it into a composition as it compared to any other compound in that reference. So there's nothing that narrows you in.
What was that site again? I'm sorry.
It would be 2347 of the record. And then 2374, we're going to flip the last two digits. And he responds to a question, yes, that is correct, yes. They would not be able to choose between the many compounds. Appendix 2341, page 60, line 9. He admits that there's nothing in W498 that emphasizes cetagliptin over any other 32 compounds in the claim. So you're going to start with Claim 1533, which is where their expert started, and our expert started, and the board started, and then we assume just for the sake of argument that you're going to use the 8 preferred acids. That's going to come up with, once you add all the potential stoichiometries, approximately 957. But it's not just that you have 957 different compounds that you're supposedly at once envisaging. There's 4 reasons the board gave why you wouldn't at once envisage them, wholly apart from just that number. The first is, you're just plain missing one of the limitations. One of the requirements of the at once envisaged doctrine is you have to get all the limitations from the reference. You can't pull it from a different reference because then you're, as you pointed out, Judge Dole, you're outside the zone of anticipation. You're in something that is obviousness but without the requirements and limitations of obviousness. And in this case, the board pointed out that the stoichiometries, the potential stoichiometries, aren't actually there.
But would one of ordinary skill in the art know that there's only so many stoichiometries available?
Yeah, so it's possible that there's, you know, that there might be a range of stoichiometries, but you don't know which ones are actually going to occur here because this is an unpredictable art. As their expert and ours and the board found on, I think it's page 33 and 34, said this is something you will only decide by trial and error.
Did they say there's 3 different stoichiometries?
There's actually, I think, 4 and a potential one hypothesized. The 4 are the 1-to-1, let me flip to that page, 1-to-1, 2-to-1, 3-to-2, 1-to-2. And then on page 2658, one of our experts explained that there might also be a 6-to-5 out there, but unless you actually do the science, unless you do the experiments, you just don't know. And so if you're looking to provide the stoichiometries, it's just not in there. There's no stoichiometry for the phosphates. There's not even a disclosure of any phosphate salt at all in there, other than trying to combine one list from 40 pages earlier with the list of 33 compounds in Claim 15. So that fails because you can't pull in your stoichiometries from someplace else. But another requirement is you have to at once envisage each member of the class. And here the board had overwhelming proof that skilled artisans wouldn't at once envisage each member of the class. Because Mylan's own expert, for months, envisaged only one of the 4 or more potential stoichiometries. He insisted that there was only a 1-to-1 stoichiometry. And as the board pointed out, look, it's just not plausible when his own envisaging theory is that he said for months, there's only a 1-to-1 salt. You can't say skilled artisans would at once envisage every stoichiometry when Mylan's own expert for months envisaged only one out of a larger number of potential stoichiometries. There's a third reason as well, and that is this salt formation is unpredictable. So when you have these 957 hypothetically existing salts, you don't actually know which ones will exist until you do the experiments, trial and error experiments. And so when you're asking the skilled artisan where you want to once envisage all the members of the class, the skilled artisan isn't going to look at these two lists and say, I at once envisage all the members of the class. The skilled artisan looks and says, I don't know what that class consists of because these reactions are unpredictable. I don't know what salts I will get. I might get a smaller number, I might get a majority, I have no idea what I'm going to get. And even that underestimates the degree of unpredictability, because the skilled artisan knows not only that he can't tell which are going to form salts because they're unpredictable, he also knows that he doesn't know what the techniques necessary for salt formation will be for any one of those salts. There's just a vast array of techniques available, and some of them will produce nothing and some might work. And so, for example, you have questions of, what are your solvents? Sometimes you use solvent mixtures, which increases the number of parameters astronomically. How do you get the things to fall out of solution? Are you going to drop the temperature? Are you going to change the pH? Are you going to have evaporation? All these things affect whether you get a salt at all. And so this means in the end that you just have no idea either whether you're going to get a salt or how to get there.
Are you familiar with the Pfizer case where we held that a particular salt was, I guess, obvious because it was in a small list?
So in Pfizer, the court pointed out that the prior art heavily suggested that the particular anion would cure the problem. And it spoke of the witness there who admitted that he had a reasonable, although not guaranteed, and that's the quotation, expectation of getting a phosphate or getting the salt in that case. So when they went and did it, that simply confirmed the expectation based on the art. Here, there's nothing in the art that tells you, I am going to get a phosphate salt. It's unpredictable as a result. It doesn't tell you, this is how you go about and get a phosphate salt, much less a phosphate salt of cetagliptin, much less one-to-one cetagliptin DHP. That's just simply nowhere in the prior art. One-to-one cetagliptin DHP was discovered by Merck, apart from that reference. In the case where you actually don't have that type of evidence, where you don't have the expert saying, I have a reasonable expectation of getting this, maybe not guaranteed, where you don't have the record heavily suggesting a particular solution, and we're in the land of obviousness now, right, because we're looking at multiple reference. This Sanofi-Synthelab case, you ended up with the opposite result because you just didn't have that record. So the unpredictability means that you're very unlikely to have somebody who's a skilled artisan who looks at it and says, I will at once envisage every member, because he doesn't know what the members are, and he doesn't know even how he would necessarily make them. And then finally, the fourth rationale the board gave is that the board just thought that Mylan's case was weaker than Merck's. The PTAB explained, and this is on page 31, that Dr. Chargade, Mylan's expert, never testified that artisans would immediately envision all the conceivable salts. And quote from Dr. Chargade does not opine that POSA would at once envisage the one-to-one cetagliptin DHP salt. Instead, the PTAB credited our expert, Dr. Matzker, who gave, I'm quoting, unequivocal and repeated testimony that POSA would not and could not at once envisage all the possible salts or the claimed one-to-one cetagliptin salt. So Mylan's theory in the end just simply fell for lack of persuasive force when it came to the at once envisaging, of course. And in the end, it really isn't an at-once envisaging theory at all. Say they want to take one list from claim 15, 33 compounds, another list from 40 pages earlier, the preferred salts, combine them, and they say, once the skilled artisan combines cetagliptin from the one list and phosphoric acid to make a salt from the second, then they will inquire about stoichiometry. But when you're going through all those steps, and I think the word used, inferred or assume or think, that's not at once envisaged. That's just a calculation of possibilities. That's potentially in the land of obviousness argument, but once you go to obviousness, they confront the problem of antedation. They confront the findings of no motivation and no expectation excess that foreclose it. So if I should turn to obviousness just for a moment. W0498 can't render the 708 obvious given that Merck previously reduced whatever the 498 discloses to practice. There's no real dispute that Merck reduced to practice at least one embodiment of claim one of the 708, and that would be 1-1 cetagliptin DHP before the 498 published.
And just to make sure I understand, everybody agrees the proper law is that only one of the claimed embodiments has to be reduced to practice to antedate. Is that right?
So you have to do that. There's one further step. And once you do that, why would you take away Merck's entitlement to a patent when it got there first, right? So we got to 1-to-1 cetagliptin DHP before that supposed prior art, W0498, even published. So we get there first. But Clark provides another requirement, but that requirement is also met here. And Clark says, look, you have to reduce to practice so much of the claimed invention as the reference, here W0498, discloses. And I would say discloses enables, because you can't render something obvious if you're not an enabling reference. And here, the PTAB ruled that W049 doesn't either. It doesn't disclose anything that wasn't reduced to practice. And it doesn't show the hydrate forms. And it doesn't enable the hydrate forms. And I should back up for a minute because I just got ahead of myself, which is Mylan's argument is what we didn't antedate on was hydrates. We conceitedly did not have hydrates reduced to practice before the W0498 came out. But then the question is, okay, does the 498 disclose hydrates? Does it enable hydrates? And the board made extensive findings that the 498 neither discloses nor enables the hydrate forms. So, for example, on disclosure, on Appendix 48, petitioner's declarant concedes none of the W498 compounds are disclosed as being synthesized as hydrates. There's just no identification of a hydrate, much less a hydrate of cetagliptin, much less one-to-one cetagliptin DHP hydrates. It doesn't disclose a phosphate salt of any of the 33 compounds. The sole mention of salt of hydrates comes in a definition where it says salts in the solid form may exist in more than one crystal structure and may also be in the form of hydrates. And that's Appendix 48 is where they quote it. But that's a statement that isn't connected to cetagliptin. It's not connected to phosphates at all. And saying that some salts may exist in hydrate form is a bit like saying there may be extraterrestrial life out there in a galaxy. It may exist. We all know it's a possibility, but it doesn't disclose it so as to make it obvious for someone who actually comes up or discovers or makes it. And the PTAB credited Merck's expert who explained that skilled artisans would understand that reference, that statement, to mean, in general knowledge, we know that some of these will actually have salts. Some of them might be hydrates, but it doesn't disclose any particular hydrate salt. And that makes sense because Formula One has millions and millions of possible compounds out there. You wouldn't read that phrase to mean each and every one of them has a hydrate, and we are now disclosing the hydrate and we're enabling the hydrate. And that gets to the alternative ground that the board gave, which is that there's no enablement. And the board acknowledged that possibly there's a presumption of enablement here, but it held that that presumption was overcome. And I wanted to mention very specifically about Wands factors. There was nothing in the opening brief that complained that the Wands factors weren't addressed, so the argument is waived. If we had seen that, we would have pointed out there's a case called Amgen versus Chugai Pharmaceuticals that says you don't have to walk through the Wands factors. But here, the board actually did walk through the Wands factors without calling them Wands factors. So if I go to page, we talked about the first, quantitative experimentation, Appendix 51, says, discovery unforeseen and arose only after substantial work with other salt forms. In that case, it was more than a year. Second one factor, amount of guidance presented, Appendix 49. No guidance in W498 for making hydrates. Presence of working examples, Appendix 49 again. W498 does not show that any such hydrates do exist. Nature of invention, Appendix 51 to 52 and Note 32. It's an unpredictable nature of salt formation. State of the prior art, Appendix 50 talks about the literature. It says the literature or record firmly supports Merck and its expert. Relative skill of those in the arts, Appendix 51. Skilled artisans would not have arrived at the particular experimental conditions necessary. Predictability of the art. Whether any salt is even capable of forming as a hydrate is highly unpredictable. That's Appendix 49. Finally, breadth of the claims. There are at least thousands, likely millions of salts embraced by hypothetical combinations of DP4 compounds and potential counterions in W0498. That's Appendix 48. So the board actually went through all of those things. And if it had been in the opening brief, we would have pointed that out. I see that my time is virtually up. Oh, now it's up. Thank you. If the court has no questions, I will take my seat.
Thank you, Mr. Lampton.
Thank you.
Mr. Rolio has just short 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The comments by Mr. Lampkin confirm that Merck's anticipation defense is built entirely upon looking at those 33 compounds and using that as your starting point.
What is your best case for saying that that shouldn't be the starting point? And how do you respond to the point about your expert admission?
So my best cases, I have two, are going to be Perricone and Impacts because those involve cases where you had a formula that was narrowed down by expressly pointing to the compound that was at issue, and that's where the court started, with the compound, not with the formula. As to what our experts said. I don't think those questions that were elicited are relevant because they only matter if there is indeed a lead compound analysis that is grafted onto anticipation. And for the reasons that you have in Perricone and Impacts, that's not accurate. So regardless of what he says, it's not legally relevant. Mr. Lampkin also addressed also made a number of points about the unpredictability of the art. And Judge Lurie, I think you were accurate in pointing out that this is in tension with Pfizer. I think the proposition of law that their case runs into is that if they're right, you run the risk of establishing a rule that, quote, any new salt would be separately patentable simply because the formation and properties of each salt must be verified through testing. I don't see any way you can get around that if you credit their point. Briefly on antedation, regarding the disclosures, the definition of pharmaceutically acceptable salts encompasses hydrates, and that definition applies to Civic Lipton. Go back to Claim 15.
You're saying a salt encompasses a hydrate?
I'm saying the definition that is provided in the prior art says that pharmaceutically acceptable salts may include hydrates. That's what the prior art says on page 376 of the record, and that definition applies to Civic Lipton via Claim 15. Lastly, Your Honors, if I may, I see my time is...
One last thought.
The evidence that was cited by Mr. Lampkin, all of that comes from Claim 4, which is not even at issue for antedation. If the panel has no further questions, I will...
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under submission.